Gibson and Iguodala jumping up, circle to our left. Tapped out by Andre. Klay Thompson's got it. Throws it ahead to Curry, who's left alone. Takes a three at the buzzer. Got it! Curry at the horn. Just released on the jump ball and nailed it.
We're going to bring you on to our huddle.
You are in the Warriors Huddle with me, Bram. And with me, as always, my boy and producer, Scott.
Scott here.
Scotty, I got a new nickname for you. You tell me whether or not it's off base. I'm like, really, we've seen each other a bunch of times, and I didn't want to waste it, so I haven't brought it up for you. It is PBS, Panic Button Scotty. What do you think? It's kind of catchy.
It's terrible.
We won't have to chase it down. Obviously, it was only a joke, but it was also a setup for this. You pissed some people off last week, man. You had some fairly strong opinions about the Warriors' ineptitude. Since the Warriors have seemingly proved you wrong, they've got their swagger back. They're looking like the Warriors again. The Splash Brothers are back. I want to spend a little bit of time, because we've got Tim Roy today, which I'm really excited for, but I want to spend a little bit of time re-examining those opinions, because we're all wrong occasionally, and I want to give you a chance maybe to admit that you were off base. What do you think?
I'm not going to admit I was off base because of a sample size of four games that just happened. It's over the course of the rest of the season was how we were looking at this thing.
That a boy, Scotty. Well, let's take them in turn just to make sure, right? There was four major things that stuck out to me. Let's start here. You said, quote unquote, the human torch may be out. In fact, it was a line that you'd obviously written before. You got it in. And since then, Steph has not only been pretty hot, he's put up 25, 28, 23, and 17 looked a lot like the old Steph. And in fact, even offered this quote. It wasn't like it was directly to you, but he did in fact say it.
It's funny, two or three weeks ago, everybody was wondering what's wrong with everybody's shot. Not to get ahead of ourselves, but it's just, you never panic, never lose confidence, and just keep shooting.
You did panic a little bit. You did in fact lose confidence. From my perspective, it looks like Steph's fine. Looks like he's right back where we thought he should be.
A 17-point game?
Looked a lot like
a 17-point game? Is that on your list?
25, 28, 23, and 17. And that 17, I think you'll see that he didn't play a single second in the fourth quarter. So are you saying that, no, you still believe this guy's career is on a downward spiral and he can't hit threes anymore?
I think that just like you were asking me not to maybe jump to conclusions after a couple games of bad shooting, don't then ask me to jump to conclusions after four games of better shooting.
So yes, despite what's happened, you still think there's a chance that Steph Curry can't hit three-pointers anymore?
Well, that's absurd. That's going a little too far.
This is your take.
No,
literally, it was your question to me. Is there a chance? I think the analogy you used was Jordan stopped dunking. He needed to create a post game. Will Steph stop being able to hit the three? That was literally your question. So now that this has happened, you're sticking to that?
I'm sticking to the fact that, what were people saying right after Christmas and Steph, as it related to Steph's game? They were saying, oh, the Steph Curry's back. Where had he been? No, now he's back. Well, guess what? He wasn't back for very long, because then he had that big setback that we just went through. So everyone wants to get so hyped up that now Steph's back. Well, guess what? He could go slide back to not being very good anytime soon. He is proving to be inconsistent this year.
So the answer is yes, then. You still think there's a chance he can't hit threes. You haven't seen enough of a sample size for you to think, nope, this guy is a historically good three-point shooter.
He is a historically good three-point shooter.
Will he continue to be going into the future? You just don't know.
That's the question mark.
My goodness. I you know what? I take it back. PBS is a phenomenal name, and I stick, but that's fine. You've said what you have. Let's get to your next point, because it's equally as outlandish and ridiculous. You said Kerr was wrong to have sat his stars against the Spurs, and that it was done out of fear, not out of injury risk. Since the Warriors have won five straight, the last four of those were by 30, 25, 16, and 25, even though Durant has not yet returned. And Kerr, when asked, basically said that those victories were due to the resting of his stars. Quote, resting those guys last week was beneficial. I think it's shown to be so. You can see our guys are fresher. And he also said that he's never been worried about his team's confidence. Here's Kerr on that.
Even after all the success you guys have had, do you still need nights like this against a good team just to make your guys feel good about themselves?
Well, I think our guys feel pretty good about themselves anyway, so I'm not worried about their self-esteem, but I like the fact that, you know, we had a good solid week last week at home. And I really wanted to make sure we kept it going because I thought we built good momentum.
Was Kerr right to rest the Stars, man?
I think he was scared. I do. I
oh,
think
my God.
The idea that Steve Kerr is not concerned about the self-esteem of his team is total BS. The guy is a Zen guru. Concerned about
what
the self-esteem
the hell are you talking
of his team.
About? Thank God you dug in on this one because I was upset when I re-listened to the podcast that I didn't do a good job of fighting you back on this. Steve Kerr, last season, this team won 73 wins. The season before that, this team won the championship. And even though after the 73-win thing, they didn't win the ship, they went to the finals and were up 3-1 and ultimately gave it up. Despite that unbelievable level of success, you are saying that this coach, after a, three-game, four-game losing streak, decided that that unbelievably successful team was at risk of losing their confidence? That's what you're saying?
What coach wouldn't be concerned about the self-esteem and confidence of their team?
After a four-game losing streak, a coach who had coached a team to a championship, then coached them to 73 wins, then coached them to the finals where they lost because the league intervened. That coach.
I just don't understand how a coach wouldn't want to be concerned about the psyche of his team. That seems like something a coach, especially in the NBA, where I think a lot of the coaching attribute of a good coach is one who can mentally deal with the team.
You're misunderstanding my question. Do I think that Steve Kerr occasionally worries about the psyche of his team? Of course he does. Of course you have to do that. He's a leader of men. You got to get a sense of what the hell their mentality is. Do I think that coach was worried that these guys would lose their confidence if they played a Spurs team and lost despite a unparalleled level of success before? No. And I think it's the most ridiculous take that you've had in the short history of this show.
Well, you and Adam Silver then can go aggressively take on Steve Kerr and his decision to rest players.
And so we got a little sidetracked. If you could go back in time, you would still go to Kerr and say, play these guys. They shouldn't have rested them. They should absolutely play.
Yeah, I think they're pro athletes who are in their 20s and can play a back-to-back game. It's not that hard for somebody at that level to do.
Now, let's assume, just for the purpose of this question, that that rest did in fact lead to this current streak. That's why they went out and they've won these last five games. If that's true, it's a big if, we don't have to agree on it. If that's true, you still say you should go back and tell Kerr, look, this is going to give you guys beneficial rest. I can tell you that. I'm from the future. I know they are going to win the next five games. But these guys are in their mid-20s, and you should sit them because it's physically possible for them to play. That's what you would say?
And under this assumption, is it assumed that they will lose these last four games that they have won if they play?
No, we don't know that. We just know that how it's played out, that they did, in fact, they went from looking somewhat vulnerable to a portion where a guy who hosts a Warriors podcast lost all confidence in them to looking remarkably dominant despite not having one of the best players in the league.
And they played who?
I think you know, hopefully. You haven't been watching the games? OKC most recently, and they donkey smashed them.
I think Dallas most recently, if you've been watching the games.
Well, if we're looking for the big high-profile win, which I think your ultimate point was, they really destroyed an OKC team.
One playoff team?
That has been hot as hell. So, again, you just stick by it. So that just so that I'm following along, Steph Curry gets hot. You don't think it's enough to say that he's a three-point shooter. The Warriors look rested and better. You don't think it was a good idea for them to have rested against San Antonio. Both of those things are true.
I mean, you're trying to paint it in broad strokes here and not listening to any of the nuance that I've been speaking. And I don't think that your summaries are accurate depictions of what I've been saying.
What nuance? Scott, what the hell are you talking about? You literally said the Human Torch will go out, and he has responded. You literally said that they did this.
I didn't say that he was never going to make a three-point shot.
Well, that's exactly what you insinuated. And you literally said that they shouldn't have rested, and the only reason he rested was because of a crisis in confidence, and that it probably wouldn't help them win. And since they've been phenomenally better, there's no nuance there. That's exactly what's happened.
No, there is nuance, because of course I didn't think that Steph Curry would never make another three again. And for you to say that I insinuated that, that's just nonsense.
Is the Human Torch out? I didn't come up with that. That wasn't some summary. That's a direct quote. If I was the producer of this show, I would do a little cut and we would have that quote come back out. Am I misremembering that? That's not what you said?
That doesn't mean that he'll never make a three-pointer again. I don't know. That's what it's a a phrase that I use to explain that he's not shooting as well and may never shoot as well as he did last season.
This is fake news. I'm telling you right now, this is fake news. God, this is unbelievable. You're changing the history, and you are completely reclassifying what the hell happened last week. I'll tell you what, let's put our money where our mouth is. Here's the last thing I wanted to bring up to you. You gave me two bets, both of which look terrible now, I think, but maybe you'll stick by them because I'm over-summarizing. First bet you told me was that you are positive this team is going to be sub 500 without Durant, so much so that you bet me $20 straight up. I will give you an opportunity right now to buy out of that bet. Instead of giving me the $20, you can give me $10 now, and I'll let you out. Do you want to stick by it?
I'll stick by my bet.
All right. So you think there's still a chance these guys will be sub 500?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. My God. All right. The second one is the first seed. You gave me 2-1. I bet you 10, you're going to pay me 20. And you said there's no way that the Warriors can possibly get the first seed, which is why you were willing to give me a 2-1, which, incidentally, knowing your betting habits is insane. Your confidence level must be through the roof. Since then, the Warriors have increased their lead. They are now sit at 2.5 games above the Spurs and are looking pretty good. I'll give you another chance. I'll give you a chance to buy out of that bet right now. Give me $5. We'll call it even. You want out?
No, because they still have to play the Spurs one more time.
Yep.
So that's the Spurs easy pick up one of those games right then. And I
think it's a guaranteed win for you. When the Warriors and Spurs play, a guaranteed win for the Spurs.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Yep. Go ahead. Yeah. I'll cut you off.
So no, I'm not gonna make a bet and then backtrack from it.
So let's ballpark it this way and then we'll get the hell out of here. Nothing's changed for you. Despite what the Warriors have shown since the last time you and I recorded behind these microphones, you have the exact same feelings, you have the exact same pessimism, you're panicking in the exact same way.
No, I feel a lot better about the team.
You know what? I should have just asked you that question up front. Now we could have really avoided some animosity here.
I know, but you had this whole agenda. Like, next time the Warriors go on a losing streak, I'm going to plan the agenda for the show and just try to eviscerate you. Like, you were just so fired up to come into today.
Oh,
I could definitely tell.
It wasn't just today. It's been the entire... I listened to that thing and was sweating. I was so angry hearing you. It was almost like I was in an out-of-body experience. I was screaming at me, like, say this! How are you letting him say that? So this is my final opportunity. I will also say, as long as we're being totally honest, you know, it's not like I suddenly believe this team is the title favorite even without Durant. You know, they still have some issues that we're going to have to get through, but it sure as hell looks like Durant's coming back. And more importantly, it looks like these guys are at least title contenders without him. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. Do you bring Durant off the bench when he comes back?
No. Why would you?
I just ease him in.
Yeah. I will. Okay.
And they're playing well right now.
That's, you know what? So for the first series, absolutely. Best case scenario, first series, I wouldn't mind his minutes to go way the hell down. The reason I wouldn't want to do it long term, one of the concerns you and I have talked about is where does he fit in, right? How do they get that continuity back? I think it's going to be hard enough working him into his old role that he already got used to, right? It would create even additional problems if we bring him back and then give him a new role. If he's playing off the bench and he kind of has to figure out how to play with new people. I don't feel like dealing with that new scenario.
Yeah, and I would love to get Patrick McCaw out of the starting lineup some way. So I would start Durant.
I am so impressed that you're able to hold your ground. I think it's ridiculous. I think it is like, it's like Kyrie Irving saying the world is flat while looking at a picture of it being round. But nonetheless, man, good for you.
No, these have been a great past couple of games for sure. I mean, it is fun when this Warriors team is just destroying things like the way that they are. It's what to me, they woke up and realized they actually have to try. They actually have to spend some time and energy on defense, and that teams aren't going to hand it to them. And it's really great to see them wake up.
I think that you and I use the word couple differently. For example, 5 games, I think, is maybe a little bit more than a couple. But who knows? You know, I mean, we'll let the Webster's Dictionary define that for us. Any parting shots before we move on to Tim?
No, I hope the best for the Warriors, and I hope I'm proven wrong in all my bets.
That's not the kind of villainy take I was hoping you're going to give us, but fair enough. Let's talk to Tim. I am so excited to announce that we are having back into the huddle a man who has spent 28 years broadcasting in the NBA, the immediately recognizable voice of the Golden State Warriors for the past 22 years, and the best radio broadcaster I've ever had the pleasure of listening to, Mr. Tim Roy. What's going on, Tim?
Not much, sir. How are you? I appreciate the intro.
Yeah, well, it couldn't be more heartfelt, and I am both excited and a little bit nervous, man. I'm always overly fired up to have you on. So if I start speaking too quickly or kind of lose our spot, don't hold it against me. Just pretend like I'm professional, so the listener at home won't be able to see past my facade.
Well, as long as you don't speak in tongues, I don't think I could understand that. But other than that, we should be fine.
You know, no promises, but I'll do my absolute best. Let's jump in, man. And we are really having you on at a remarkably opportune time. After spending a little while struggling without Durant, the Warriors have seemingly righted the ship and are on a 5-game winning streak. So all seems right with the world again, but really, we've been treated to 2 Warriors teams over the last, 3 weeks? A team that was struggling and a team that has seemingly found itself. And I want to talk to you about both. Let's start with the struggling Warriors, right? The obvious and easy excuse for how they were playing is that they were going through a real nasty travel stretch, and they lost one of the best players in the league. Are their struggles, can it be as explained or explained as easily as that? Was it just where they were in the schedule and losing Durant, or was something else going on, do you think?
I think it was a combination of those two factors, and I just think that the season and who they are catching up with them. And so I think they just kind of lost their way for about 2 weeks, and or less than that, actually, just a few games. And then they really just couldn't find a way out, and they didn't have, you know, a player, somebody to lift them out of that, especially on the offensive end. They didn't have anybody that was going great guns, and so every quarter, every possession seemed to be a struggle, and they just had to fight their way through it. Now, the point should be made, though, that this is real life in the NBA. And that we haven't seen that in a few years. And that's because this team has just been playing at such a high level for 3 years that you know, we never saw, you know, a couple of teams beat them in a row. And then all of a sudden, you know, a road trip that, you know, there was a chance the Warriors would come home with a losing record on a 5-game road trip. I mean, that hasn't happened in years. And so it's just reality. It's just the way the NBA is. Every, you know, team, whether you're great or you're bad, is going to hit a stretch where they don't play well. They don't play up to their standards, and the Warriors just had their run happen at a time where everything came together. You know, the team was a little tired, the schedule was brutal, and Kevin Durant goes down, and everything, you know, came together to kind of force this, you know, to face the Warriors and to make them look in the mirror and to reestablish who they are.
I mean, as far as this just being the, you know, normal part of any NBA season, I thought their struggles ended up being this great litmus test for just how long you've been rooting for the team. You know, because I'm with you, man. You and I watched a Warriors team that would die to go 3-5 on the road. You know, they were having 19 wins all year. That would have been considered a giant success under Cohan. But there's this whole other series of fans who, you know, are coming a little bit later and are used to the Warriors just being world beaters and never having a stretch like this. And we kind of saw that, right? Some portions of this fan base legitimately panicked when things were going poorly, including my co-host, to be, you know, perfectly honest with you. So, no, it was interesting to see how everybody reacted to that differently, you know?
Well, yeah, you know, it's funny. I was thinking when the Warriors were flying home from Atlanta that had the Warriors lost that game and come home 2-3 on the road trip, it would have been a failure where, you know, we went over a decade where you went 2-3 on a 5-game road trip. You were going, hey, that's a great trip.
You we're know, turning right? the corner. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah, exactly. And so, and let's face it, the road's hard, and 2-3 on the road is a respectable road trip for just about any team. But the bar has been set so high, you know, for the Warriors that, you know, anything less than perfect is, you know, everybody's going, hey, they lost a game. Well, yeah, teams lose games in the NBA. It's just the way it is. You know, the league's too good. The players are too good. And it's just one of those deals. I think it was a real reminder of just how hard it is in the league and how hard it is to win on the road in the league. It's a tough go. The Warriors have made it look easy, the last few years.
You are one of the only people, or maybe one of about 500 or 600 people in the entire world who can competently answer this question. Because the Warriors weren't just traveling. They were traveling through an in particularly nasty stretch where you guys were going across the country essentially twice. It was a stretch that Kerr was worried about before Durant even got hurt. You actually traveled with the Warriors. In fact, you have done NBA travel for the better part of 28 years. How hard is it, man? How difficult is it actually having to get on a plane, get up at 4 a.m.? And what kind of exhaustion does that cause?
It just kind of wears you down because you're constantly flying. You're constantly getting off of an airplane. You're constantly checking into a hotel. And you don't get great sleep. You're constantly, trying to figure out where you are, what you need to do to, pack and the whole bit. So it's pretty hard. It's a real distraction to you mentally because you just can't for whatever reason, seem to feel like yourself,
Sure.
And you do things like you put in, your room key. If you're on a long trip, you put your room key in the door and it doesn't work. And then you realize about 2 minutes later, oh, that's last night's room. What number am I in tonight? And so you get mentally fatigued. And then, the way they did it to bring you all the way back home from Atlanta on a trip that featured a stop in Chicago. So, but you still come all the way back home, play a game the next day at home, which is just like you're still like you're being on the road. You're lucky if you've unpacked at that point. And then the very next day, get on a plane and fly 3 hours, play a game and fly 3 hours,
sure,
and then play a game deep in the heart of Texas. I mean, that was just insane. And it just lacked all common sense. So to have anybody expect a different outcome, I think, was really abnormal and just wasn't being true to the whole situation.
I love the idea of you being in a hotel, you've forgotten which room it is, right? You're putting the key in, you're starting to get frustrated. You're everything like me. You probably hammer the door a couple times. Meanwhile, there's somebody inside there terrified, thinking that someone's breaking into their room,
Yeah,
and they peek outside
yeah,
and it happens to be Tim Roy. I love that idea, but I digress. Give me a sense. So really, man, you've been doing, I've never been on an NBA trip in my life. You've done it for close to 3 decades. How bad was that last trip compared to the normal travel within an NBA season? Was it uglier than any other trip you've ever taken?
It's got to be right up there. I mean, when you factor in both trips, when you factor in the whole 8-game stretch, 11,000 miles, basically China and back is basically what we flew in that time period. When you factor all that in, it was as hard as any trip I've been on.
Okay.
I've always been an advocate of the let's go and get them over with. Like, I'd rather go on two long East Coast trips of about 2 weeks, get those games, done with two long trips, rather than going back and playing one and then playing three and then playing four more. And, but the problem is national TV schedules all these matchups, and with the Warriors being so good, their schedule gets jumbled around to make sure that national TV is covered.
Right.
And so that's why they get these weird, trips. That's why the Warriors went out for two last week to Oklahoma City and Dallas. And instead of adding Houston and San Antonio onto that trip, no. We got to make you go back out a week later, which
yeah,
we're doing next week, and go out, fly 3.5-4 hours to play two games, and then come all the way back. Makes absolutely no sense whatsoever unless you factor in national TV.
Of course, right. Well, take me to the other side of the coin. I've already alluded to it. The Warriors have seemingly found their stride. Why? Is it just because the travel's over, or are you noticing other changes?
There were two things I think that went on. One is they got their legs back underneath them. Okay, so the travel, they got some days at home, sleeping in their own bed, seeing their families, all that, I think factored in. And then the other part was, I really thought that Draymond Green reminded them of the defense they have to play and the defense they can play. in the Philadelphia game.
Yep.
They were down by 16, and they still look like the struggling Warriors, and by all rights, probably should have lost that game. But what happened was Draymond would not let them lose.
Yep.
And as a result, you know, he started playing energetically. He started, you know, flying all over the floor, and he kind of showed the Warriors, hey, this is how we have to play. And the rest of the team came along for the ride that night. And by the end of the fourth quarter, they were back in rhythm a little bit offensively. They were playing the kind of great defense we've seen them play. And the very next, you know, night out against Orlando, the Magic weren't ready to play, and the Warriors just jumped on them. And that game was over quickly because the Warriors basically ready to play and ready to play the way they could.
You know what I thought the defining, I couldn't agree with you more, and I thought the defining moment of that Philadelphia game, and I'm going to forget the Philadelphia point guard, Nick McConnell, I don't remember who it was, but Draymond, about 3-4 minutes into the fourth quarter, decided to pick him up full court, guarded him the front 45 feet, and then when they got across the half line, he then receded and picked up his, you know, his actual man. He picked up Dario Saric.
Right.
There's nobody else in the league who, one, could show that kind of passion, but two, show that versatility. You know, he really adequately guarded the point guard spot and then backs up and takes up the power forward. It's going to be, when he wins the Defensive Player of the Year, it's going to be those kind of replays that we're going to be watching.
No question. And he's the only guy, you know, I think in the league that maybe Kawhi Leonard could have done that, but the intelligence factor, I mean, he's so intelligent defensively that he knew if he did that, he'd still have time to get back to his guy and get back into the play. And he has the confidence to do that. He has
right.
the confidence in himself.
It's the kind of thing that shows his effort level. I mean, if I'm on that team and I watch him do that, there's no way in hell I can continue to be lazy on defense. He just guarded somebody who wasn't even his man. It forced everybody to bring up their energy level and their passion.
Absolutely. You know, and that's what a leader will do. That's what a guy on you know, that has the defensive chops, that's the kind of impact he can have on your team.
All right. Let me take us back to the negative side of the coin. I will pat myself on the back. I never panicked. I thought it would be okay. But the closest I came to being concerned was with Steph's shot. You know, this is a man who not only is known for three-point shooting, he is the best shooter I've ever watched in my, you know, short and illustrious career of watching the NBA. What the hell was going on? I mean, was he just tired? Were his legs not there? Or what do you credit the short shooting slump that is now over for Steph?
I just think that it's the bar has been set so high for him that he had a period of, you know, a games. We've seen it before. He had a 1-for-11 game at Denver when he was tired earlier this year. He had a 0-for-10 game against L.A. And I just think that, you know, he got into a situation where it went over a period of few games. Everybody right. misses shots. Problem is that the Warriors have shown none of these normal human being tendencies over the last, you know, few years. So when it happens, it's like, oh my God, what's going on?
Right.
I just think it was a perfectly normal, you know, little dip there for him, and that it was just a matter of him shooting his way out of it.
Yeah.
And he's done that now. You know, I think we're so accustomed, again, we're so accustomed to Steph playing perfect and at a high level, and then the Warriors doing the same thing, that when they fall down like that, that when they show that they're human, that they're you know, in a little bit of a rut, you know, we tend to overreact and say, oh my God, what's going on? You know, is it something mechanical? And I think with Steph, it was just a matter of him feeling good, getting his legs underneath him, having a rhythm to his game, and he's got that back now.
Yeah, it makes sense. And I'm somewhat burying the lead. You know, leave it to the Warriors to have enough talent where they can lose somebody like Durant, and I can spend the first 15 minutes of our podcast not even mentioning his name. But we've had some positive news. You know, it looks like Durant is at least doing well within his recovery. You know, he's back traveling with the team. We saw him on the bench in OKC. We saw him on the bench just a couple nights ago. And some reports came out today that he's doing some 5-on-0 work and he's got lateral movement back. Do you have any reason to believe he won't be back at least some point this season?
I think that, you know, he's right on schedule to be reevaluated next week. And so I think that, you know, if everything goes well, he should be back hopefully before the end of the regular season. But remember now, once he gets, you know, reevaluated and they say, okay, you can practice now, then you also have to get him into shape,
right?
In the real NBA shape, and that's going to take a couple of games. So hopefully he gets back in time where he can play a couple of games in the regular season before heading into the playoffs. But I think you also have to sort of temper your expectations. I don't think he's going to be, you know, stepping on the floor and being KD, you know, right off the bat.
Sure. How about continuity? You know, we watched, I mean, gosh, the Warriors were great, but it took them a little while to work in Durant this year. And they seemingly just kind of hit the peak of that right before he got hurt. Talk me off the ledge. You know, one of my last concerns about his injury is that it'll be hard to regain that continuity. You know, they've gotten used to playing without him. Do you think it'll be hard working him back into the fold? Or is it just, you know, once he gets his win back, we'll be right back where we were?
I think there's always a little bit of an adjustment when a player comes back. I think there's always going to be a little bit of a let's get this team into a little bit of a rhythm. I think on the Warriors, it'll be a little bit easier because of the way the ball moves. You know, when the ball moves, people get shots, and when guys get shots, they tend to get back into their rhythm a little bit easier. And so I think it'll be okay, but I think there definitely will be a little bit of a learning curve, though, as we saw at the beginning of the year. Once this team got going and figured it out, transformation of Kevin Durant into a Warrior was relatively seamless.
Yeah, it sure as hell was. And I'll even tip my hand a little bit. I like just seeing him on the bench. I get a sense of confidence just seeing his face out there and having him, you know, celebrate with the guys. For the team, from what you can tell, does just having him back on the trips, having him on the plane, having him in the locker room, having him in the huddle, is that giving him a boost, do you think? I mean, is it just affecting me, or does it also affect the boys?
I think it's great for them to see him around and to see that he's, you know, working hard to come back. And I think it probably gives them a sense of everything's going to be normal. And I think for Kevin, it also, it's a boost for him, because when a player is working out away from a team, you know, the phrase you hear over and over from players like that is that they say almost to a man, "Hey, I didn't really feel like I was part of the team," because, you know, you're back home, you're working out, you're rehabbing, the team's on the road, they're sure playing games and bonding on the road. So I think that was good for KD to be out there too. So he, again, felt like he was part of the Warriors and part of this journey, part of this process.
Last time you and I spoke, man, you were reasonably confident in the Warriors' title chances. Anything happened between these two podcasts that's changed that, or do you still feel pretty good?
Well, again, you feel good because the team's playing so well, and they're very, very, very talented with their starting five. And I think so that part of it, I think, is still really good. Now, the question is, when will KD come back? How, you know, what will he be able to do when he comes back? I can't answer that question.
Right.
You know, if he wouldn't come back or couldn't come back in this year and wouldn't be able to play at a high level, then I think that puts a big, you know, hit into your postseason. And, you know, then you've got to really looking at grinding out every, you know, playoff series that you have. But I still feel reasonably okay that the Warriors will get, you know, KD back, and that makes me feel reasonably okay that there's a chance that their run will go into June.
I gave you a crap question. Let me give you a better one. Does this team need a completely healthy Kevin Durant to win the title?
I don't think they need a completely healthy Kevin Durant to win a title. I mean, I want him to be healthy for his own sake and
yeah,
for
sure,
his own peace of mind. But no, I don't think that he would have to be completely healthy. I think it'd be great to have him out there, and I think it'd be, you know, if he's on, be able to play and not risk further injury per se by just moving around, then I think it would be great to have him in a playoff run for the Warriors. But,
yeah,
you know, it's a very, very good basketball team. It's very, very well coached. And so I think they have a shot.
Sure. You worried about the one seed at all? Scott and I were arguing earlier about whether or not they could get the one seed. One, do you think they can get it? Two, do you think they need it? How important is it?
I think they can get it. I think they, barring anything, you know, miraculous or ridiculous, I think they will get it. And do they need it? No. I mean, as we talked before, they're, you know, an incredible road team.
Yep.
I don't think they would have a qualm or an issue even going into a place like San Antonio and winning a game 7 there. I think it's great to have, though, because I think other teams don't like coming to Oracle.
Right.
And so the more games you can get at Oracle, the better, because I think it hurts other teams more at times, and maybe it even helps the Warriors.
You know, one of the things, just kind of a random aside, I agree with you, per usual, but the reason I want them to get the one seed is because I want them to be able to easily work Durant back in. I want that first series to be real easy, give them, you know, 18, 20 minutes a night. And if they end up having to play OKC in the first round, I don't see how the hell they do that. He's just going to have so much of an emotional investment. They'll have to play him, or he will be going a little bit harder than he needs to. And I think he'll end up playing more minutes than anybody wants. So we'll see how it plays out. But it's kind of a collateral concern of mine as far as the one seeds.
Yeah, I think so. But that's, you know, I think that's why, you know, Steve Kerr is who he is. I think he would keep it an eye on that, and he, along with the medical staff and general manager Bob Myers, you know, I'm sure are going to map out exactly, you know, what will happen, you know, when and if KD comes back, and you know, how many minutes will he be able to go for the first, you know, few games, first couple weeks, and I think they'll keep a monitor on that, because, you know, it's like Greg Popovich said about resting the other day, you know, it's, do you play a guy one game, or do you get a guy for the next 3 years,
right?
And the science is telling you know, the Warriors that they needed rest in San Antonio, so that's what they did. And so, you know, hopefully that will keep, you know, guys like Draymond Green and Klay Thompson and Curry, you know, away from that threshold where you might be vulnerable to an injury, and that's why they sat down.
Okay, you don't know it, but literally Scott and I fought about that for like 20 minutes in our last podcast, and I was saying exactly what you're saying. This is a medical decision, nothing further. And just to kind of put the ideas together, I love Steve Kerr so much. This week, for example, Silver comes out with that memo basically saying, look, resting players is a really big deal. We're really concerned about it. Steve Kerr addresses it and says, I totally agree with him. That makes perfect sense. Silver is really smart. And then, and I, you know, I don't have any inside knowledge, who knows whether or not it's true, but from my perspective, then he still sat Andre Iguodala with a phantom left hip strain. And, you know, and only Kerr would be able to kind of do both of those things at the same time, you know? But I won't ask you to comment on that. Instead, I'll just ask the obvious. Am I right in assuming you supported his decision to sit the guys in San Antonio? That was the right move?
Absolutely. Absolutely the right move. You know, if they want to fix the resting of players, fix the schedule.
Right.
And that will help rest players. And let's also face the fact that if the Warriors have rested guys in a game against New Orleans on a Tuesday night that was not on national TV, we would not be having this
right.
discussion.
Nobody would care. That's right.
The resting happened in a national TV game, followed by another team resting on the national TV game the following week. That's why we're having this discussion.
Right.
And, you know, as I pointed out to somebody the other day, I said, you know, if I was a Dallas Maverick fan and I lived in the Bay Area and I spent some hard-earned cash early in the year, I would not have seen Dirk Nowitzki.
Yeah.
Because the Mavericks rested Dirk and Andrew Bogut and I think two other guys early in the season. Was there a big hullabaloo about that? No, because the game wasn't on national TV.
Yep, that's right.
And so it's you know, and it allowed, you know, the guys who were broadcasting the game, you know, that they really didn't have a lot to talk about in that San Antonio game. So the concept of rest got basically broadcast for 3 hours on national TV. And look, I understand people being disappointed about it, but again, the rest part of it, there's two things here. We now know more about players and how they react to stuff through the science, the technology that we have.
Yep.
And all the technology was pointing toward the fact that Warriors were running a real risk of injury because they had tired ball players. And the reason they retired was an insane schedule.
Yeah, right.
So to me, that's pretty obvious. You want to fix this, fix the schedule.
Of course. No, and the criticism misunderstands the ultimate goal for the team, right? Like the analogy everybody keeps drawing, the people who say they shouldn't be sitting them, it said it's like if I went to go see a play on Broadway or something for a specific actor, and the actor sat, I'd be furious because I paid for the ticket. What that misunderstands is that, you know, actors in plays or in TV shows, their main goal is to entertain the fans. So when they're not there, not entertaining, they're not doing their job. teams, that's not their main goal. Their main goal is to win a championship, and sitting people helps them reach that main goal. And anybody who's not seeing that, I think, is only talking about half the picture. But I'm you know, covering a subject probably too much. Let me push us in a slight different direction. I went through the standings today, and from what I can tell, there are four possible teams the Warriors could be matched up against in the first round, depending on whether or not they're the first or second seed, and then depending on, you know, where the rest of these standings play out. Those four teams are OKC or Memphis, if we end up as the second seed, or Denver and Portland, if we end up as the first seed. Which of those four is our toughest matchup? If I'm a Warriors fan, who do I hope we don't play?
Well, I think the obvious one to me right off the bat, because they've shown they can beat the Warriors, is Memphis.
Yeah.
You know, they've beaten the Warriors twice, and that's a tough matchup. And you know, going down there, it's going to be it's a tough place to play. You know, they have a unusual team for the modern age, because they've got guys who play with their back to the basket. You know, Marcus Soles added a 3-point shot this year. They play tough defense. So that, to me, would be the obvious one. But in Oklahoma City would be another one. But you know, it's the playoffs. Everybody's going to play hard. Everybody's going to get your best shot. So I think, you know, I don't think they'll have any easy series. But I think if you're in terms of degree of difficulty, Memphis comes to mind because they've had success,
yep,
not only in the past, but also this year.
And they bring that "we don't give a damn about who the Warriors are" mentality. You know, that Marc Gasol, Zach, or Zebo, you know, those guys aren't going to be caught up in our celebrity. We go up 20, they're still going to be charging at us. Whereas some of those other teams, you know, may fold a little bit quicker. Let me go to my favorite topic. It's the story time with Uncle Tim. And what I want to do is give you a couple names, and you give me the first story that pops up in your mind. The first name I want to give you, Don Nelson.
Wow. You know, so many stories with Nelly. His tactics and his, you know, just a lot of the quotes and stuff that he would give you is just really, you know, really curious. now, I'll tell you one that not a lot of people talk about, and that is when the Warriors drafted Steph Curry. Obviously, there was a rumor that there was a trade deal on the table, that the Warriors had agreed to send that pick, whoever they drafted, to Phoenix for Amari Stoudemire and someone else.
Yeah.
Because I think they thought it was going to be the Kid Hill out of Arizona, the forward.
Yeah.
And so Curry then falls to them. Minnesota takes two point guards, one Flynn, one Rubio. And, you know, Thabit goes to Memphis. And all of a sudden, there's Curry. And Curry, you know, takes, you know, the pick. Phoenix is fired up. They think they're getting Curry. And Nelly comes out, and he said two things in his really quick, you know, press conference. He said, first of all, he's not going anywhere. You know, he's not going anywhere.
Yep.
Nelly really liked him. And then the second thing he said, it's always stuck with me. He said, we just drafted the best passer in the draft. Everybody was talking about his shooting. And for those who hadn't seen him play, they were all thinking, oh, he's Dale's kid. He's got to be a, you know, standstill type shooting. He wasn't. He was a point guard, and you'd see him play at Davidson. But Nelly comes out and says, we just drafted the best passer in the draft.
Yeah.
And that, to me, was really interesting. Because I think Nelly saw, you know, the aspects of Curry's game that would translate him more to Steve Nash than to his dad. And so, and lo and behold, you know, here comes Curry, a kid that can pass the ball and shoot the ball. And so that was a real interesting moment for me with Nelly.
I love that, because the main concern with Curry is whether or not he could play point guard in the NBA because of his inability to pass, right? So that Nelson would not only see, look, that's not a concern, but be able to attribute a strength to it is a credit to him. Last name, last topic, Andre Iguodala. What do you got on Andre?
Boy, one of the most interesting men I've ever met, one of the smartest NBA players I've ever met. But he's always got to be a little of an instigator. He's always trying to keep you off balance and the whole bit. And, you know, so he's a very interesting guy. But he's also, I think, along with Draymond, this is one of the strengths the Warriors have, is that they have two of the most intelligent defensive basketball players, you know, going. And Andre is really smart. He understands angles and you know, where passes are going to come from and where they're going to go. You know, how many times do you see a guy throw the ball and it goes right to Andre? That's because he knows the play. He knows where that pass is supposed to go. And he's a real, real interesting guy. And, you know, I mean, he's got to be a real smart guy because he figured out Twitter early on, and he went and found whoever the person was who had at Andre and cut that guy a deal, and Andre got that Twitter handle. So really, real smart guy.
He's ahead of his game. Also, he joined the Warriors. He was the first kind of high, or at least in my mind, the most marquee first guy to realize, hey, that team's going somewhere. I got to join them, right? And he's one of the main reasons we got pushed to the next level.
Oh, yeah. And it's to me, of all the deals that Bob Myers pulled off, this is the one that I respect the most because even, you know, the signing KD, okay, whether you were, you know, they made their pitch and the players really, I think, helped pull that off, having them show up there in the Hamptons. But the Andre deal, that's all Bob and his staff, because you go back and look at everything that had to happen in that deal. You know, they somehow got Utah to come on board in that deal and take Beatrice and RJ to have the picks to make that deal with you that Utah jumped in order to facilitate that trade. That had to be a negotiation nightmare. And the fact that he pulled that off was amazing.
He must have had naked pictures of their GM. At that point, Beadrin's career was completely over. I mean, I understand that it was an expiring contract.
No, but it was, well, what Utah was doing, though, what they did was they didn't give up hardly anything in the deal. But what they did was they acquired assets. You know, the expiring contract that those guys had, plus the fact that they got draft picks. So for Utah, it was kind of like, okay, we're going to have to take these guys for a year or so, and it's not we're not moving forward this year as a result of this deal, but we will have draft picks, and it turned out that one of the draft picks they had, that the Warriors actually held on to 7 and got Barnes, but so the pick that went to Utah turned out to be Rodney Hood. He's not a bad little player.
Right.
So they're giving up hardly anything in the deal. Utah ended up, you know, compiling assets and turning them into a very, very serviceable NBA player.
You know, I was so proud of the naked pictures line. You know, what you're saying makes sense, but I really felt good about that. It's unfortunate that you had reality to show how unfounded that take was. Yeah, it was what it was, man.
Just call me Mr. Buzzkill.
Yeah, that's what I'll do. Hey, Tim, thank you, man. I love doing this. I really appreciate you coming on. And, you know, hopefully this wasn't too painful for you.
No, it was fun. I always appreciate it. And thank you so much for calling me.
Yeah, of course. I am fired up to announce that we are finally returning to Are You Smarter Than a Bandwagon Fan? For the people who have been listening, we left the last one on kind of a cliffhanger. We had Mike McGinnis and Simon Rex come and join us. They are challenging our current champion, Jericho Faustino. They're going on a 2-on-1. We ran them through the gauntlet, and they made it all the way back to 2007 and 2008, where they missed a giant question about Steven Jackson. This week, we've got Jericho back on to fight him back. Jericho, you out there?
Yo.
Yeah, did you listen to the episode where Mike and Simon tried to take you down?
I listened and was not impressed. First of all, hey, I'm a big fan of Simon Rex, Dirt Nasty, what up? But this other guy, Mike McDonald, I have no clue who he is, but he's trying to pop at the people's champ. I had to Google who you are, and I still don't know who you are, dude. It's all good, though.
First, let me ask you this, because they questioned it a couple times. Jericho, do you actually exist? You're a real person, right? You're not like a program we put together. We are speaking to an actual person in front of an actual microphone?
Yes, the people's champ is real. Go ask anyone in the streets, they'll tell you. You know what it is.
I can't wait for this podcast to be over. I'm going to go tackle someone in the street and be like, yo, do you know who the people's champ is? And obviously they're going to tell me Jericho. I've got your questions right here in front of me. Any other parting shots you want to take at Mike and Simon, or do you feel good to go?
No, let's do this.
Scotty, before we jump in, I always like to drop predictions. Jericho has proven me wrong every single step of the way. I love his confidence. I really do love his confidence, but I think he's a little bit emotional this time. I think Mike may have gotten under his skin. I think he's going to lose. What do you think?
I have stuck with Jericho from the beginning.
It's true.
I've been a fan of the People's Champ since he first was on, so I'm definitely sticking by Jericho because I've seen the depths of the knowledge that he has.
Yeah, oh yeah. And one last thing behind the scenes before we actually give you the questions, just to bring the audience up to speed. In the past, we've had Jericho on. He's always been amazing, but his sound levels are always a little bit low. Scotty asked him about it this time, and he goes, oh, would you like me to use this microphone I have? Jericho, why have you not been using the microphone the entire time? Why have you been hiding that thing?
Man, I didn't know if you were worthy yet, man. I don't know if I want to bless you with my voice.
Well, fair enough. Well, I'm glad we finally reached the voice-worthy section of our relationship. With that in tow, man, let's jump in. If this is the first time you've ever listened, the rules are these, and they are simple. Jericho's going to get an opportunity to answer as many Warrior trivia questions in a row as he can, and we go back in time. So we'll start with a question from this year. If he gets it right, we go back a year, and we will see how far back he can make it. He is trying to beat Mike and Simon to keep his role as the champion, and as I said before, Mike and Simon missed a question in 07 and 08. Let's do it. Let's start with this year. Scotty, you got the clock ready to go?
The clock is ready.
All right, Jericho. Who did the Warriors sign as a small forward to help replace the injured Kevin Durant?
Matt Barnes.
Factually correct. We go back a year. The championship loss. What Warriors players made the All-Star team?
Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green.
Final answer?
Yes.
That is correct. We go back another year. The championship win, 2014-2015. During the championship parade, what player used E-40's choices, commonly referred to as Yep, to take shots at the Cavs during an interview with Roz?
Steph Curry. Nope. Draymond Green.
Yup. Man, he's just playing games with us, man.
Wow.
He's just playing games with us. I mean, that's I kind of got excited because I thought he missed it. Yeah,
no,
I thought
he got me.
Yeah, I got pretty excited. Well, obviously correct. We move back a year, 2013-2014. I think this one's kind of tough, Jericho. I'm just going to tell you. I think this one's kind of tough. What Warriors player was named to the NBA All-Defensive First Team?
What Warriors? First Team.
First Team.
Mm-hmm.
Follow-up question does not bode well. Where are we at time-wise, Scotty?
Do I have any hints?
We have 13 seconds.
My hint to you is it was not David Lee.
God damn it. All right, never mind. Andre Iguodala.
Final answer?
Yep.
Correct. Man, he pulled it out. Yeah, I didn't think he was going to get that. All right, 2012-2013, who did the Warriors lose to in the second round of the playoffs?
Spurs.
Bam, I won't even do the final answer. We both knew you knew that one. We'll go to 2011-2012. Is he even burning up any of his... Outside of that last one, he's been answering like the first 10 seconds, right?
Yeah, the last... Well, not the last one, but the one before that. That's the only time he's gone past, like, 15.
This one's going to hurt him a little bit, I think. All right, Jericho, 2011-2012. Which Warriors player led the team in points, assists, and steals?
Ooh. Points, assists, steals. What year?
2011-2012.
That's a good question. Damn.
12 seconds.
Okay. Has to be...
5 seconds.
Oh, the drama.
Say Steph Curry.
Final answer, man?
Nah. Monte.
Which one? You got to tell me. I'll give you a hint. One of those is right. Which one are you
God
going?
God damn it. Monte, my boy, Monte.
Yeah, final answer?
That's my boy. I have to go with Monte.
That's the final answer. Unfortunately, man, That is right. God, this guy's pulling him out. All right. We go back to 2010-2011. What Warriors rookie led the team in blocks?
2010-2011?
And I worked a hint in there for you. You know, I didn't say what player. What Warriors rookie?
Rook led the team in what?
Blocks. Can you hear him Googling in the background?
Oh, man, it has to be Jeremy Lin. Or?
8 seconds.
Ekpe Udo.
Which of those two are you going with?
I mean, it could be Jeremy Lin, but I'm going to say Ekpe Udo.
I'm going to say that you are correct. We go to 09-010. The Warriors selected Steph Curry in the draft at this pick.
I would have thought you had this one ready to go.
Oh, he's fired up. Maybe this is just drama.
Number.
That's surprising.
I'm going to say he's for sure the lottery.
Okay.
But
10 seconds.
Johnny Flynn got picked before him. And Rubio.
5 seconds. Seven.
Number seven? Is that what you said? Yeah. I'm sorry, man. I couldn't hear you. Seven?
Number seven. I'm going to say. Let's see if I got that right. Yeah, seven.
That is correct. We go to 08-09. This one's fairly simple. Who was the head coach?
08-09. Ooh, that could be, I'm going to say Don Nelson, if I am not mistaken.
Well, you could be mistaken.
08-09.
I'll give you a chance to give me another answer, unless you want to stick with that one.
Nah, yeah, it has to be Don Nelson.
And you are right. This is the one they missed, man. So should you get this answer right, then you continue to be our champion. In 2007,
Steven Jackson.
2008, what player did the Warriors draft in the first round? Don't let this be a tie.
Well, he's going to have some answer.
But if he misses it, we have a tie. We're just talking, man, just to give you time. Oh. Your time is still going down here.
12 seconds.
My boy, Marco. Marco Don Nelson Bellinelli.
5 seconds.
Final answer. We'll pause the clock. All I need is a final answer from you. You let me know. What do you think? Is that done?
My boy, Marcus Bellinelli.
I'm going to let you have Marco because his first name was definitely not Marcus, and you are...
No, but that's what I call him because I know him like that. That's my boy.
Yeah, you guys are pretty close. Well, fortunately, that answer is right. And Jericho continues his streak somewhere out there, Mike and Simon, if you are listening. My deepest apologies, man. This guy knocked you out. Any remaining shots you want to take at them, man? Any victory laps you want to run?
Simon Rex, Dirt Nasty, keep making those tracks. Keep making those movies. I'm going to keep watching them. And Mike McGinnis, keep weaving those baskets, you hipster.
Well, fair enough. Yeah, that is what it is. You know what? I'm going to give you one more just to see what you, just to see what you'll say, and then we'll get out of here, right or wrong, and you're our championship player regardless. In 2006, 2007, true or false, the same Matt Barnes, who is currently playing for the Warriors, consistently started for the We Believe playoffs team.
Was that true or false? Or was that?
Yeah, true or false.
No?
Did Matt Barnes start for the playoff We Believe team?
DD, Jay Rich, Stack Jack, Al Harrington, Andres Bejans.
10 seconds.
Nah.
I mean, I wanted you to lose, Jericho. I'm just going to tell you that straight out. I wanted you to lose, and you not only dominated the real competition, but you got that one right as well. We won't waste any more of these questions. We will absolutely be having you back. What's that? It's got four? How many in a row is that?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, you beat Josh, you beat John, and you beat Mike and Simon. So that's three. You are two away from coming away as our ultimate champ here, Jericho. Are you concerned at all, or is this hella easy for you?
Hella easy.
Hella easy. All right. Well,
nothing.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to make sure these questions are crazy hard for you next time. I cannot wait for that. But until.
You almost got me right there earlier.
I remember.
You stumped me. I was like, man, I was second guessing myself.
Well, you got him right. You are our continued champion. You have earned our congratulations, and we'll be seeing you real soon, man. We appreciate you coming on.
Show. Peace.
All right, man. Huge fun, you guys. True every single week. Certainly true this week. Please remember, if you want to reach out to us, we can be hit up at warriorshuddle@gmail.com. Our Twitter account is @warriorshuddle. We are on a series of websites, warriorsworld.net. We're on almightyballer.com. We're on vsporto.com. And we're on, or at least Scotty's on, irefusetochangemyopinion.com, which you have to give him credit for, man, which is just awesome to him. If you'd like to give us a review, we'd really appreciate it. To do that, hop on iTunes, since we are not only on iTunes, but on a bunch of other podcasting services. And with that in mind, we really appreciate you guys listening. We remind you, if you want any Warriors Huddle gear, you can actually find that stuff on the shop at almightyballer.com. A little expensive. I'm just going to come out and say it. It's a little bit more expensive than I'd like.
But we got some new logos going.
Yeah, we got the new logo. It's worth checking out. So I'd hop on there, even if you don't want to buy anything, just to see what's up. And keep in mind, we love you guys. We appreciate it. And hopefully, we'll see you next week.
Good.